We are back at it after a bedlam hangover, we'll call it. Oklahoma State gets shellacked in the second half. We have a lot to discuss. Let's get right into it. Joining me is Kyle Porter. Kyle, bedlam didn't kind of turn out the way you and I were. We thought it'd be a close game, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, no, I'm still in a fog from Saturday. I don't even know where to begin. You know, I wrote this the night before the game. I really thought Oklahoma State had a chance to not only win this game, but kind of turn the tide in the series, within the conference, and really kind of establish itself as a top Big 12 team year in and year out. I think this would have affected a lot of recruiting, future recruiting that Oklahoma State did. And it went about as badly as it could have gone, you know, considering where OU was with injuries and stuff like that. So I don't know. Where do we begin? Where do you want to start?
Let's begin with the head ball coach. The last podcast we did, you and I talked about the game. We broke it down a little bit, and then you were like, "Okay, do you have anything else before we, get to our guests?" And yeah. I said, "Yeah, I do, Kyle. The one big concern I have in this game is how Mike Gundy coaches when he sees that OU logo, when he sees that OU helmet." I brought that up, and I even asked, "Is that an unfair question?" It was on full display. There, anyone who denies it now, they can't. Anyone who didn't even think that was a thing now thinks it's a thing, because it is a thing. There's no explanations for many of his decisions, which we can go through all of them here in a second. But I thought I'm really disappointed in Mike Gundy, just the way he coached. It was a concern I had, and that concern was realized in that, like, try, give it, like, I talked to my dad after the game, and he wasn't even mad. He was just like, give it the college try. Like, you didn't even attempt to beat OU, it felt like, just with the conservative game plan that they had. So that was my biggest takeaway of the entire game, was just the head coach, who we all agree is a great coach. You and I have talked about him all season, how well he's done and the program he's built. But for whatever reason, he has a mental block when he sees Oklahoma. And that is an issue, because that's who you have to beat to win the Big 12. The two Bedlam wins he has in his tenure, he's 2-10. One, he had by far the superior team, by far the superior quarterback, and an offensive coordinator with a lot of FU in him, in Todd Monken. Todd Monken went for the throat.
Yeah.
And 2014, you can talk about, oh, Mason, all that. That was a total fluke.
Yeah.
They were down 13-14 with 10, 11 minutes to go. P. Ryan gets hurt, and Bob Stoops gives them an absolute reprieve with the repunt. They had no business beating Oklahoma that year, even though that was a down OU team with Cody Thomas at quarterback. So
your boy.
So, the last 4 or 5 years that have been close, he hasn't won them for a reason, because he coaches differently against Oklahoma than he does other teams.
Well, you were in the post-game press conference, and it sounded like, it felt like, it was almost like he, I don't know, like the Florida State game a couple years ago when they played number one Florida State in the first game. You don't really know what you have with a kind of young OSU team. That was back in 2014. And you come out of that press conference and you're like, oh, well, yeah, we lost. Like, we kind of knew, like, going in, it was going to be a tough game. And that's almost what this press conference felt like. And it didn't feel like, it almost feels like he doesn't understand the situation, like the moment that you're a top 10 team, that you're playing for a Big 12 title. Like, where was the, hey, we're playing for a Big 12 title attitude throughout the game? And it, like you said, we can talk about the decisions that he made, but my biggest grievance was not trying to score points before halftime. You got 18 seconds left. You've got the ball on the 50, you've got a timeout. Try something. And they run, and Thomas Fleming, who writes for PFB and writes about, play calling and kind of breaks down plays, he said, you didn't even, like, try to disguise the fact that you're going to run. You ran out of a full house. I think they had, like, six guys in the backfield. And it's like, where's the, like, hey, we're playing for all the marbles here attitude? I didn't get that sense at all out of him. And I thought that was probably, if not the most frustrating thing, one of the most.
Totally. And I want to go down all the decisions here in a sec, too. But I think people forget, like, the 2013 game, like I brought it up last week, like they just ran the ball the whole game, just like he tried to do against OU and Norman on Saturday. And then what happens? The second they get down, they led most of that game. The second they get down, and they have to go score, Chelf throws it all over the yard and just marches down the field. Same thing on Saturday. They get down 31-17, first play. Deep ball to Seals, complete.
Yeah.
He doesn't open it up until he absolutely has his back against the wall, and then it's almost too late at that point. And so it's just I go back to the 09 game. I was at the 09 game. I know that's what the game Boone, I think there's rumors that Boone wanted him fired after that game because they got shut out, which I get it. And this is where I really had a problem with it. They're running toss sweeps on 3rd and 15 in a tight game. Because, and his reasoning probably was, well, Zach, his arm, he was banged up. You know, we're just trying to not make too many mistakes. Well, you have Brandon Whedon sitting over there on the sideline who 3 or 4 weeks before had thrown 50-yard lasers to Justin Blackman. Like, he doesn't put all his cards on the table. And I don't understand why. Brian Keating and I, we do our show Crashing the Boards last night. I love his take on it. He sees ghosts of Bedlam's past. He sees Chris Rockins getting hit in the face mask on the onside kick. He sees Garrett Limbrick getting the silly flag in 88 to push him back to 4th and 14. He sees himself throwing a 50-yard laser to Brent Parker, hitting him in the numbers and him dropping it. He is waiting for disaster to strike at all times, and he coaches that way. He coaches like they're going to lose the game on every single play.
But
and you can't coach like that against Oklahoma. You just can't.
Yeah, I agree. The point that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me is that you're a 10-point underdog. Like, and he coached like he was like Alabama playing an FCS team. You know, like I don't understand the and I think people are a little bit confused about Gundy. Maybe more so nationally, that he's not this, you know, gunslinging, like he's not Dana Holgorsen, he's not Todd Monken, he's a very conservative, I think, person, and definitely coach. And so the problem is, that's fine the rest of the year, you recruit pretty well at Oklahoma State, you have better dudes than Kansas State and Iowa State and whatever. The problem is when you face a really good talented team like OU, is you have to change that up a little bit, you have to mix it up, and he just kind of like he just stays the exact same and expects a different result, and it's I don't know, it's maddening. Like,
didn't even run his offense. Like, where are the jet sweeps? Where is Jalen McCleskey? Like, they didn't even run what they run. No deep balls, which we'll get into. Like,
yeah, I want
to
talk.
And this comes back to, you know, you mentioned he's not this gunslinger mullet coach that people think he is. And you're right. He's from the Pat Jones school. And I heard Pat Jones this morning on the radio. You know what he said? He said, well, OSU probably only contends with OU. They probably win 1 out of 2 or 1 or 2 out of 10. And they couldn't remotely contend with Oklahoma for 60 minutes. That is blatantly untrue.
Was he talking about this year?
He was talking about Saturday.
What?
They win 1 or 2 out of 10 because they just don't have as good enough players. And he basically said that, you know, they got Pirine, Mixon, Mayfield. Oh, she really didn't have much of a chance. Second half, they got ran over. You know, that's the mindset in which Gundy coached. It's like, well, God, they just have better players, and we're just going to try and hang on for 60 minutes and just try to contend. Like, that's how he coached, and that's his mentor talking.
Yeah,
that's not me just speculating. That's his mentor. So, and you mentioned coaching like Saban. Gundy coaches like he has the steel curtain on defense, like going for the field goal to make it a one-score game. Have you watched the second half? You're not getting any stops. And while we're bringing up Saban, remember the national title game last year? He couldn't keep up with Clemson. So what does he do? He kicks it off. That's Nick Saban and Alabama's defense he's trying to keep off the field.
Yeah.
When's the last time Mike Gundy had an onside kick, ran a fake punt? Took a risk at all against Oklahoma?
Yeah.
I can't remember one, and that to me is disappointing. So let's go over the decisions. You want to, Kyle?
Yes.
One by one?
Yeah. Well, okay. Do you just want to give like your three worst and I can give my three worst, or how do you want to do it?
Can I just go over all of them?
Yeah, let's do it. Just start. Okay. Let's go.
I mean, first quarter, Mason fumbles on the goal line. maybe if he doesn't fumble and they're not on the two or three instead of the inch line, he runs it twice and goes for a touchdown. That to me is defensible.
Yeah.
Where he kicks the field goal to make it 3-0. It's early. It's the first quarter. That is defensible. But if he just says, okay, it was early, it was a field, you know, early in the game, lots to play, we were backed up to the two or three, I didn't like it in that situation. If he just says that, I'm cool with it. But do you know what he said in postgame, Kyle? He says, he was asked about this exact situation. He said, well, it was raining. Guys can slip and fall in that situation. He's worried about his guys slipping and falling down. That's how scared he is coaching in this game. I mean, plus you mentioned it in your piece, the message it would probably send if you go for it and get a touchdown there. I think it's defensible if you just say, well, it was early in the game, I wanted to get points. But his defense, he was afraid of his guys falling down.
Yeah, it's not good. I think it's defensible too. I think I'm almost always a proponent of going for it in that situation when you're on the one or two, just because even if you don't get it, they're on the one or two.
And you're winning the field position battle.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm fine with kicking the field goal, but yeah, that's not a good reason. Okay. This is the next one.
First quarter, I think people forget about this one. I think it may have been before that decision when they were at midfield and had a fourth and one and punted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still kind of okay with that. You know, it's first quarter, scoreless. He chose to punt, which you're at midfield. It's fourth and one. You'd been running the ball at will. It's defensible. If you send a message of intent to your team if you go for it there, but if you don't get it, you're open for criticism. I didn't have a huge problem with him punting there.
Well, so here's my thing. Here's my thing with the first quarter is you stop OU on. I think their first three possessions they punted,
yep.
And you only come away with 3 points. And he said something. I wish I could find the quote. Hold on, let me find it real quick because it was a really. I think it kind of speaks to what we're talking about. It was a really strange quote. He said, he was asked about not capitalizing on good field position early in the game. He said, not really, as in I think that like not real that really didn't matter. Like I said, we're up by 7 with 1:30 to go in the half. We had battled back and forth, established a running game, and controlled the line. Then the big plays got us. When you play on the road and allow big plays, the fans' momentum can swing can really make that difficult. It's almost as if he didn't want to get up by too many. Like he didn't want to be up like 14 or 21. Like he was like, well, you know. We're all right. Like, what did he think was going to happen with the OU offense? Did he think that one of the best offenses in Big 12 history was just going to, like, score 7 points?
Yeah, I mean, totally.
OU punts 3 times to open the game. Exactly the same thing that happened against Texas Tech. And Oklahoma State took advantage against Texas Tech. They got up 14-0. That's exactly what had to happen here. And so that would be my reasoning for going for it early in the game. Is you got to get – I mean – they are clearly stumbling out of the gate. You have to get up 14 or 17 or even 20 to be able to win this thing. And it's like he didn't, it's like he forgot that how good OU's offense was.
You knew going into that game, you had to score 40 to win.
Yeah.
And you're settling for field goals and punting. Okay. Next decision. Halftime.
I'm apoplectic about this. It's just incredible.
Let me set the table. OU drives. They have 1:20 to go. They drive right down the field, score, tie it up. You're Mike Gundy. You're waiting for the kickoff to happen. Like, well, they tied the game. We got a few seconds left here. I can't wait to take a knee on my own 20. I just can't wait to get out of here tied at halftime. I cannot wait. Oh, Junior, you're running too far. Junior, that's too far. I can't kneel it on the 50. Oh, okay. Junior, get back over here. Junior, go tell your daddy you won't do that ever again. And Mike, this is Mikey Y upstairs. Mike, let's take a shot downfield. Mike, I have a perfect post pattern to Washington. They have not seen it on film. Can we throw this pass? No. Take a knee. Mike, we're on the 50. If we take a knee, you will be laughed at across the country. Okay. Full house, backfield, run the ball. I'm not calling timeout. There, a lot of his decisions in the first half were defensible, like I said. How in the world, with the time on the clock, a timeout in your pocket, do you A, not try to get the ball in field goal position, kick a field goal to get up 3 points, or B, once you lose your mind and run out of a full house backfield, call timeout and throw the Hail Mary when you have absolute freaks at wide receiver, you have one of the worst pass defenses in America, and he doesn't even try. He takes it into halftime when he knows Oklahoma's getting the ball. They just ran through your defense with a quickness in about a minute and a half. How in the world do you not attempt to score points there? That to me is indefensible. That to me is ludicrous. Brian Keating asked him about it after the game, and his reasoning was, well, I didn't like the way the ball was rotating. I didn't think we would have much luck with a field goal. You got to create your own luck, Mike. Like, you're never going to beat OU with that attitude. That's just plain and simple.
I have nothing to add. I don't know how to top that. I mean, I was prepared to just eviscerate him, and I can't top what you just said.
Junior, you're running too far. Junior, take a knee at the 20. Let's get at the halftime. I mean, I didn't plan on saying all that. It came to me. But my God, I mean, could you be more conservative? Could you coach more scared than that? You're too afraid. Like, he is afraid probably. Here's his he's probably afraid that Mason would get sacked, fumbled, go the other way. Like, and it goes back, Kyle, to the Central Michigan game. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
He was asked about why he didn't run the ball instead of taking knees, could have burned more clock. He referenced the Herman Edwards fumble, which happened in the 70s. Literally the only time in the history of football someone's been running out the clock and they fumbled and got scored on the other way. He's referencing the 1970s. That's how scared he is. That's how afraid he is that something bad is going to happen. And if you coach like that, you're going to get beat every single time.
Yeah. And the thing at halftime, it bothered me more, or it bothered me less, that they didn't get points. It's not the easiest spot to get points in. You're at the 50. According to the TV broadcast and the play-by-play like box score, they had a timeout. A couple of people told me that they didn't. But everything that
they had a timeout. Yeah.
Some people are trying to tell me that they didn't, but from everything I knew, they did. You only have to get like 18 yards to just try the field goal. Like, yeah. That's the thing that is confounding to me, is you've got like you were given a gift by Junior. You're given a gift. He gifts you an opportunity at points.
Best return of the season.
You know, it's
you had it, to have it.
It was the best return of his career, I think. No, that was later in the game. He had a 56-yard return. Best return of his career. Best game of his career, probably. But you're given a gift at midfield, and you've got I can't even talk right now. You've got Amendola, who kicked a, what was it, 53-yarder earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I don't know if I want to use him. You know, we got Ben. It's like, just take the gift. Just try it. Like, just see what, just do it. And it's so perplexing to me that you don't even try to throw a 20-yard pass to get to the 30 and just try a 47-yard field goal as time's running out. Like, what, like, do you really believe that the downside is so great that OU's going to block it and return it for a touchdown that you can't just try it? And the thing that I wrote on Sunday night, and I really believe this, that Oklahoma State only scored 3 points after halftime. I think the end of that half sent a message that it was like, well, I'm just going to tuck my mullet between my legs and run back to the, you know, to the locker room. Like, you're not sending a good message to your players, your fans, anybody who's watching that game. That was the most egregious of all of his decisions to me.
Yeah, and I thought you wrote a really good piece about that, even in the aftermath. You wrote about it in 10 Thoughts, but you wrote a separate piece just about that one decision and how that really kind of decided the game. And it, not only did it send a message to his players that he was happy with a tie going into halftime, even though you had dominated the first half, it sent a message that you were going to try and hang on for dear life in the second half rather than going at him, throwing punches. Like, it's just,
yeah,
it completely sent the wrong message. And it really put an exclamation point on the fact that he just – and I got all these tweets, and at halftime I wrote on Twitter, like, how in the world do you not throw a Hail Mary there? This is why coaching – he coaches not to lose when he sees OU. And people kept saying, oh, he coaches like this all year. It's what we've always done at, before the half. He never goes for points. Well, that may be true on his 20 or 30, and that is true on his 20 or 30. Not at the 50. Not in a game where you're trying to win the Big 12 championship. That's indefensible.
Well, that's completely my thing. It's you're going for the Big 12 championship as a 10-point underdog, and you're coaching as if you're a 20-point favorite. And I don't understand why. I don't understand if he doesn't understand that he is a 10-point underdog and doesn't have as good a team. And like I just
what if Kyle? What if Junior returned it to the 30 of OU. Does he take a knee? Does he even attempt the field goal in fear that it gets blocked?
That is a great point. And I was thinking about this last night. What yard line did Junior have to get to for them to have tried something?
I know.
I mean, legitimately, like, is it the 48? Is it the 44? Like, it's mind blowing to me that I don't know. I don't get it.
I have a decision that might be worse, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
Let's get to it right now, actually. It's the next one on my list. You're down 11 in the fourth quarter. You finally get the ball to Blake Jarwin. Matt Emilian is just ecstatic. He finally sees Blake Jarwin getting the ball. He makes an incredible play to get it close to a first down. They give him the first down. They review it, somehow rule that it was short.
That was bizarre, by the way.
Bizarre ruling, and Mike Gundy trots out the punt team. You're down 11 on the road, haven't stopped him at all in the second half, and Mike Gundy runs out the punt team. And I think I wasn't down the field. I didn't have a good look at it, but I'm convinced all the fluorescent hat dudes surrounded him like, Mike, we can't punt. We're down 11. It's the fourth quarter. What are you doing? We can't punt. So what does he do? Calls timeout. Oh, let me clear my head here. Wait a second. I was going to punt down 11 in the fourth quarter. Okay, let's go for it. And they get 15 yards. He was trying to punt down 11 in the fourth quarter. On fourth and inches.
Well, that is less of a grievance to me than the fact that he had 5 minutes to think about what he was going to do and had to use a timeout because he made the wrong decision.
Didn't he run the punt team out there before they reviewed it? I think then he... when did he call timeout?
He called timeout after the review.
Did he?
Yes. They reviewed it. They reviewed
I'm going to have to check the tape on YouTube.
They called they called it a first down initially. And so it's like he didn't realize that they were going to reverse it and then panicked at the last second. It's like your only two choices here are that they reverse it or they keep it. So if they reverse it or if they keep it, it's a first down. So you have nothing to worry about. So you literally, you only have to make a decision about whether they reverse it. And they did. And he didn't, he like just panicked. I don't know what he did. And so you send your punt team out there. It's not like he had 10 seconds to think about it and wanted to regroup. He had 5 minutes. That was the longest review of the year. Well, I mean, what are you doing?
I think he called timeout before the review.
Did he?
Yeah, because I remember I tweeted, "This is why you will never beat OU with parentheses if he punts," because he had already ran the punt team out there, then he called timeout. Then I think, which, if that's the case, you gave him a chance to review a first down. Which I have to go back and watch it. I'm sure people are screaming at their radio podcast right now, but
I'm pretty sure it was after. You should tweet it out, or I should tweet it out, or something. I'm scared to put that out there. Actually, people will make fun of me for not knowing.
I'm trying to go to Big Dave's YouTube page.
Big Dave is my hero. I hope he listens to these.
I do too. Big Dave hadn't put it up yet. I think he's in mourning. He hasn't put the Bedlam game up yet.
I mean, we can.
Either way, like, he lost his freaking mind running his punt team out there. Like, I mean, that's almost as egregious as the halftime decision, or the end of the first half decision. Like, he was going to punt down 31-20 with how much time left here?
It was like
11:39 left. Okay. Like, it is nut cutting time. It is not the time to punt. Down 11 when you don't have the steel curtain on defense.
The steel curtain.
So that was another decision I thought was just completely maddening. And then there's one more, Kyle. I have just one more decision. You may have more, but this is the last one. And he goes for the field goal with Grogan. Your guy Kyle Cox wrote about it. He really decided he was kicking a field goal like on second down, third down when he kept running the football.
Yeah.
And again, it's a defensible move. He made the case that, you know, you get it down to one score, OU calls their games differently on offense on the next possession. It's defensible, but I also think, you know, you send a message to your team like, we're going for it right now. We're going to go win this game. And plus, it's raining. It's cold. Ben Grogan has not been, you know, lights out down the stretch of the season. He's missed field goals. Like, there is no guarantee that one's going in.
Yeah.
Like, that's the other part that's not really defensible about it is, like, you know, that field goal was what, 50-50?
Yeah, at best, maybe.
Best, I think.
I mean, I think it's defensible. The issue is that Chris Carson had been, I mean, OU couldn't stop Chris Carson. He ran for 8 yards the play before, 15 the play before that. Like, he had been really good on that drive. I was okay with that call. I think your point that it's more important about what it says to your team than the actual points on the scoreboard. I really believe that. Like, I don't know. There just wasn't the Gundy did not display the cojones I would have liked to have seen on Saturday.
Well, we forget, Kyle, they're 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. Like, they feed off emotion. Yeah. They feed off.
Especially in that game.
Their head coach rolling. They're kids. Like, they're very.
Just
they're
a kid.
They're affable. I mean, they do everything right. And their coach let them down. I'm sorry. Mike Gundy let his players down with his game. And we haven't even mentioned the Pro Football Focus. This is another. This falls another Gundy decision.
This is mine. So this is my
one. Go ahead. You take the floor.
Mason Rudolph was 11 for 25 on Saturday. He was not good. That's being incredibly kind. He was egregious. He was really bad. But the one thing he did well was, and I don't even know if he did it well. I think he just has great receivers, and OU's secondary stinks. By the way, do you remember what my dad's what he said on Friday about what Oklahoma State should do?
Remind me.
He said they should throw it deep like 15 times.
Yep.
And they didn't, but Mason Rudolph was 3 for 3 on passes over 20 yards, which means he was 8 for 22 on passes under 20 yards, which is just unbelievably bad. But they had success downfield and they wouldn't throw it. And I don't understand why. And Gundy's explanation of it is not good. He said it wasn't spinning downfield like we want. I don't think he even knows what he was saying. It was a terrible explanation, and it was made even worse by the fact that they were 3 for 3 on throws of over 20 yards. Rudolph had the one to Washington, the over the shoulder catch that was incredible. He had the one to Seals that you mentioned earlier, and he had one other one. I can't remember what it was. It might have been to Zach Veach. In the fourth quarter, that might be the one that's referenced there. But I thought it was just an abomination that they didn't throw it downfield more often. Like and Gundy has said this before. He said it in the K-State game earlier this year. He's like, I don't want to throw it downfield. You know, Mike taught me into it, but I don't like throwing. And it's like that is literally the thing that OU is worst at. They are 125th in the country in giving up plays of 50 plus yards. There's the only team worse than them is like Idaho and two other teams that shouldn't even play Division I football. Like they're so bad at defending the deep ball, and it's the only thing that Rudolph was doing well, and it's the only thing that you don't necessarily have to be super accurate on, and they wouldn't do it. And it doesn't make sense. I don't understand why they wouldn't go to it. I mean, it just blows my mind that people at home watching can see what's happening. They've watched OU all year. They watched tape on OU. They suck at defending the deep pass. I had an OU friend over last night. He's like, why didn't y'all throw deep more? I was like, I don't know. I mean, I would like some answers for that as well. So I don't know. I thought that and the pre-halftime thing were the worst for me.
It's OSU's biggest strength. It's Mason Rudolph's biggest strength. It's OU's biggest weakness on their entire team. Any phase of the game, their biggest weakness, their secondary against the long ball. It is absolutely, I mean, there's no defending it. I mean, not only that, Kyle, like, and I think Mason, to a certain extent, you know, Mike Gundy was scared to death anyway, but to see Mason throwing the short game that he was, 8 of 22, that made him just tense up and just say, well, hell, we're not going to throw it up for grabs.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, let's say you just throw it up for, like, those are good as punts. And that's all you were doing in the second half was punting. And the most egregious part, Kyle, like the 3-for-3 is indefensible. How do you not throw more deep balls against that secondary? And their other starting cornerback gets hurt. They have a freshman who hasn't played in weeks. They're trying to redshirt on one side. They didn't throw at him one time.
It's incredible.
That's horrible coaching. Horrible. Abominable coaching. That is egregious. The fact that Mason's biggest strength, and this is something we've seen all year, Kyle. Like, has it been this bad? No. But he is better at throwing the deep ball than he is the short stuff.
Yeah.
So why not try it? Why not try it? That was the worst decision. You can go on all these decisions. You can argue that the halftime one, but just the overall game plan of not throwing it deep is what got them beat.
Yeah, I agree. Gundy said, we couldn't get a very good grasp of the ball. It wasn't really a good day for us to have an opportunity to throw it down the field. It was literally the only thing you were doing well on offense, like, besides running the ball in the first half. I do not understand that explanation at all.
No, it makes no sense. And, you know, Mason, like, if you told, like, I thought a lot of things were going to happen Saturday. I had a lot of predictions, a lot of thoughts. Mason playing like complete hot garbage was not one of them.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And you're probably not going to win, but you have to play to his strengths, and his strengths is throwing the ball deep. It makes no sense. And the rain obviously affected Mason. It did not affect Baker Mayfield. He threw for nearly 300 yards on only like 18 attempts.
Yeah.
Had a bunch of drops too on top of that. And he had no problem at all. And Mason has played in the rain. His first start ever against Baylor. Absolute monsoon in Waco. Didn't have a problem. I don't know what happened on Saturday.
Not a lot for the Oklahoma State offense. We need to get to some sponsors. We're 30 minutes in.
Oh my.
It's time for the Coop Ale Works Toast of the Week. Coop Ale Works, brewing great-tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale, or the refreshing Horny Toad Blonde. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get-together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Ale Works, and please remember to drink responsibly. Hopefully people imbibed a few Coop Ale Works on Saturday evening. Do you have a toast?
Let's see here. I would like to toast Vincent Taylor. I thought in the first half, OU couldn't block him. I thought he really did all he could in the first half in the game. I think the OSU defense, like, we haven't really talked about them giving up 600 yards, 300 rushing yards in the second half. Obviously, that's not good enough. Obviously, Glenn Spencer gets way more of a pass than Mike Yurcich ever does. But it's also a team game, and when your offense isn't getting first downs, you're hanging your defense out to dry against OU, and I thought that's what happened. So I'm not going to blame too much on the defense other than, you know, I want to toast Vincent Taylor just for a tremendous season, has a legitimate claim to Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, and I thought he wreaked havoc in the first half.
Yeah, that's a good one. I would like to toast two people, the first being Jordan Stearns. 19 tackles, tied the all-time Oklahoma State record. I feel like he just shows up in games like this. Like, he just makes plays. He was getting run over by P. Ryan and just hanging in there. I just love watching him play. I think Oklahoma State's really going to miss him next year on defense. And then my other toast, I'm going to toast an F5 IPA to this man because he owns Oklahoma, and that's Bob Stoops. 10 Big 12 titles and nine losses at home, I think is the stat. it's despicable for me to watch. I don't need to see Baker running around Owen Field waving his arms and, you know, saying that this is my house and, you know, all that. But, which, by the way, the headline on the Oklahoman, I don't know if you like this as much as I did, but I thought it was tremendous.
Rain Baker
with him
R-E-I-N
with him flying down the field like freaking Jason Terry at a Mavs game or something. So yeah, I'm gonna toast Bob Stoops because I thought Eddie Radosovich said it pretty well on Twitter. He said did Bob Stoops run a marathon while walking through Mike Gundy's mind yesterday?
It's a good one.
Yeah, he owns the state, and I hate saying it, and I thought it was going to be different this year, but it was not, and OU has 10 Big 12 titles. 9, really, but they say 10.
Yeah, I have one more toast, too.
Okay.
Double fisting for the two running backs. Double fisting two F5s. Chris Carson, Justice Hill, they ran like men possessed in the first half. They looked awesome. Justice Hill, you're wondering why more teams didn't recruit him when you're watching him run around, especially OU. But no, it was almost like I told you on our post game show on Periscope. It was like hallucinogenic watching OSU run the ball like 95 Nebraska in the first half.
I know.
When was the last time we saw that against OU? And unfortunately, they couldn't sustain it in the second half. I thought the game plan was just horrific, other than those two running the ball really well. And good toast to those two guys.
I agree with that. How good was Baker, though? I mean, I hate it. Like, I hate it so much. Like, I don't want to watch that. He's the AJ Pierzynski of college football. Where, like, if he's on your team, you love. Like, if he was on OSU, I would be all in. And I sports hate him. I actually like watching him play, and I like how big of a gamer he is, and that he just brings it in big time games. But I do not want to watch him dance and run around after beating Oklahoma State for two straight Big 12 championships. It's I hate it.
It's shocking to me how good he has been and is. When he was at Tech, he was just okay, made a lot of mistakes. He is playing, I think 2008 Sam Bradford for me, Kyle, is the gold standard of college quarterbacking. It's 50 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, just absurd numbers. And Baker has a higher completion percentage, a higher efficiency, and a higher quarterback rating than Sam Bradford did that year. He's playing at a better, more efficient level than Sam Bradford did. Now, Bradford had more touchdowns, I get it. But it's astonishing how good Baker Mayfield has become. And I think his offensive coordinator has a lot to do with that. You know, Lincoln Riley was out there for the taking, and Mike Gundy hired Mike Yurcich instead. And it's not like Riley was completely off the radar. I remember seeing his name all over like OSU message boards. People wanted him back then. And it was a great hire by Bob Stoops. I think Lincoln Riley's lost one Big 12 game in his career at OU. He's like 17-1 or something. He's helped Baker tremendously, but Baker's been awesome. And it was astonishing how much better he was than Mason Rudolph. We thought it'd be a lot more even than that.
Yeah. People are still tweeting me the tweet that I sent out last week, wondering why the spread was 14 points when Oklahoma State had the much better quarterback. That was it's a little bit of a troll job. I was sort of serious, but that's going to be in my mentions for many weeks.
Well, when you go full troll,
you
have to expect it.
Oh, I deserved it. I owned it. It was cool. It was good. It was a fun week. It was fun to have, but you know, and I mentioned this to my OU friend I had over last night. I said it didn't feel like nationally people cared about this game. Like, it just felt like it was like dismissed as like the little brother of, ironically, of championship weekend. But for the state of Oklahoma, I thought it was, I don't know, it was so much fun, and the build up to that game, I just thought it was really cool.
Is it ironic at all that Mike Gundy is the older brother and that Cale is the little brother?
Yeah, it is. It's quite ironic.
He's afraid of his little brother.
Yeah. We need to talk uniforms. Let's get to this week's uniform preview, brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop shop your one-stop cowboy shop on Campus Corner, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. They busted out the Paisley. What is it called? I don't even know what it's called.
It's called barbed wire.
How surprised were you that they went black, white, black on the road?
Pretty surprised. I thought they would go, 2014 combo with the orange pants. But black, white, black, I think, is their second best road look behind black, white, orange.
Yeah.
So I thought it looked awesome, Kyle. I thought the black face mask looks so much better on that helmet.
Yes.
I still want them to pick between the barbed wire thing and the paisley. But I thought it looked pretty good. I thought the combo itself looked really good, I thought.
Yeah.
And you can sign me up for one or the other between the Paisley or the barbed wire. The Paisley, I think, kind of grew on me in that game. I thought it looked pretty good as far as with the all-black helmet. I thought it just accentuated a little more. It was very Oregon-ish, I would say,
yeah,
than opposed to just a plain black helmet. So I didn't hate it. I just – between barbed wire and the Ed Hardy print, I get flashbacks to – years gone by. I got flashbacks to like tattoos on the bicep with the barbed wire. I get flashbacks to Ed Hardy. I get flashbacks to a dude wearing an Ed Hardy t-shirt with a barbed wire tattoo. How about that? But I thought overall it looked good.
I'm with you. The black face mask is a lot better than the orange for whatever reason. The barbed wire needs to go. It's not good. I don't want it. I don't want to see it. But yeah, you can keep the bandana print, Paisley, whatever thing. That's fine. And with the boss black face mask, I think it looks decent. So do you like
I venture to say that the uniforms was the best part of Saturday.
That and Justice Hill. Yeah.
Yeah.
Justice Hill going over 1,000 yards.
Were you going to ask me,
do you like OU's uniforms? Do you think they're good?
I kind of like what my dad said, that when you turn the TV on, you know, it's OU.
Yeah.
There's a real brand with that. And it's true. Like nowadays you can turn the channel and you don't know who's who other than, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, if they're not wearing those ridiculous black helmets. You know, there's something to that. There's recognizability. Now, I've always said teams like OSU that don't really have any uniform tradition. Obviously, yeah, go full Oregon. That's great. It's great for recruiting.
Yeah.
But even OU, Kyle, like recruits love that stuff. Even they have gone to these alternate uniforms just because Bob Stoops was like, look, I got to recruit and the kids like this. So I have to, sorry, fans. Like I got to get players.
Yeah. They're Indiana alternates. You mean?
Yeah.
They're so bad.
They're not good.
Their traditional ones are fine. I don't love them or I don't hate them, but the alternates are awful. I mean, you could have done a lot better than what they did with them. Okay, I do want to talk a little bit more Bedlam and get your playoff thoughts. I know we're running out of time, but first we need to hear from our sponsor again this week, Chris's University Spirit. Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom-printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head to toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit. Okay, you want to talk end of the season bowl playoff stuff, or do you want to talk more Bedlam?
More Bedlam. Let's go.
What else is there to talk about? We've basically fired Mike Gundy. We've traded Mason Rudolph. What's next? I mean, so here's my thing, and I'm curious to see what you think. Was I naive to think coming into this game that it would be different this year? That and Justin Southwell wrote this really well on the site today. People should check it out. Since 2010, this game's been super competitive other than 2015. And so it sort of felt like 2015 was the outlier of like OU dominating and the rest of the games have been either OSU wins or really close games. But was I naive to think that this year and going forward could be different for OSU?
No, and I think even if you picked OSU to win the game, I don't think you can look back and say, well, that was stupid. They didn't belong on the same field. I mean, it was, what, an 11-point game with 13 minutes to go? OSU forced a turnover. They have the ball in their possession to go make it a tight game.
Yeah.
So despite the fact their head coach didn't put all his cards on the table, didn't play to win, they were within striking distance late in the game. So I don't think that's egregious. I think OSU controlled the first half other than the last, you know, 5-10 minutes when Baker got rolling, throwing the ball. The bottom line, Kyle, their defense isn't good enough and you have to outscore people, and you're not going to outscore people if you don't throw the ball further than 20 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Another thing to bring up, Kyle, like just look at the game plans, the difference in game plans and mindset in coaching then the Cactus Bowl against Washington as an underdog versus Oklahoma on Saturday. They're running trick plays. They're throwing it all over the yard. They're throwing it deep to Washington. And that Washington team had more first-round picks than OU.
Yeah, they had more first-round picks than maybe any defense in college football. They had like four first-round picks on their defense.
And they lit them up, and they're playing OU's defense, which was historically bad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've made my thoughts on that clearly known. But I just – I don't know. I'm curious about how fans and I'm just curious about the future, you know? Like, I don't know how fans are going to I do think that at least from my perspective, there's a little bit more credence to what Boone Pickens said earlier this year about the OU thing. Do I want to get rid of Mike Gundy? Absolutely not. I think he's a really good coach. I think he's great for Oklahoma State. But now you've got this problem, and you got to solve it. You got to figure it out, because you can't just keep losing to your rival for the next 10 years. I mean, is Gundy going to go 2-20 against OU and then just retire? Like, is that how it's going to go?
If he coaches like that, he will.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I don't know what this means for the future. It just, you're not going to get a lot of opportunities like that, not only to win a Big 12 title, but with a beaten up, broken down OU team with a crappy defense and a terrible secondary. That opportunity doesn't come along very often, you know, once every 2, 3, 4, 5 years, something like that. And you didn't take advantage of it. And that to me is frustrating as a fan, as a consumer of Oklahoma State football.
Couldn't say any better.
Are you excited about Ohio State in the playoff?
Let me collect my thoughts here. What took place with the playoff committee was an absolute travesty. They basically told us that a week two loss on the road against an in-state rival matters more than the conference schedule of the toughest conference in America, according to them. That winning your division, winning the head-to-head, and winning a 13th game that Ohio State didn't play, didn't have to play, sat on the couch. None of that matters, because they went to Norman and won. To tell me that the non-conference, one non-conference game both ways, weighs more than the conference schedule, like that to me is egregious. And if I was a Penn State fan, I would be just beside myself. I mean, and the frightening part is Danny Cannell made this point, Joel Klatt made this point as well. If Ohio State – just flip the resumes. If Ohio State has Penn State's resume, it's not even a question. They overlook the Pitt loss, and they say, well, they beat Penn State. Man, that Pitt team's pretty good. I mean, you know, Pitt lost on the road to Oklahoma State, and they could have won that game. They beat Clemson. That Pitt's a really good – man, I mean, Ohio State, that's a tough loss, but Pitt's good. Man, I mean, I know Penn State I know Penn State went to Norman and won, but gosh, they lost the conference. They lost the division. You can't argue it. Like that to me is the most frustrating, egregious part of the whole thing.
Well, and that's my biggest issue is you've got this moving target of criteria that nobody actually, I mean, it changes year to year. I don't know. I still don't know what best team means. If Ohio State played OU right now, OU would win on a neutral field. OU would beat Ohio State right now. Ohio State's not that good right now. So, like, sometimes it matters that you get better over the course of the year. Like, they ranked Florida State ahead of Louisville because even though Louisville just hammered Florida State and they finished with the same number of losses because Florida State got better over the course of the year. Okay, well, what does that even mean? Like, didn't OU get better? Didn't Penn State get better? Penn State would smoke Ohio State right now.
Penn State won every game after Ohio State by 14 and scored 38 points in all every game.
Yeah, like, and so it's
you want to talk about peaking.
And so I don't understand if they're measuring resumes. I don't understand if they're measuring most pros. I don't understand if they're measuring. Kirby Hokut's talking about OU's defense. I don't know what that means.
That's like, silly.
I don't know why that matters. The whole thing is, and I feel bad for the committee because it's like they don't really know. Like they're just kind of making it up as they go and trying to convince everybody that they know what they're talking about. And it's just such a crappy way to figure out the playoff.
Well, Eileen, like this whole notion that we got to get the four best teams. Well, just let Vegas pick then. Like, it was hilarious watching that show. They had pros and cons for every team. The pros for Michigan was would be favored on a neutral field against Penn State and, you know, all the other. Like, that's a pro now. We're just going to go by the desert, what they think out in the desert, all the bookies. Like, for me, like, best should not be – it should be – you should pick the four most deserving teams, not the four
– which I think
teams
means,
with the most pros, or else you're just picking Bama and Ohio State every year.
Which I think means four best resumes, but they yes. They don't
And that's what Trammell made a great – he wrote a great piece on it that, like, this business of Hoka talking about strength of defenses and evaluating football is stupid. Just look at the resumes, who they played, who they beat, who they lost to. Simple as that.
Jake Trotter brought this up. If OU plays Washington's schedule, guess who's 12-0? Guess who's in the playoff? And so
they're in.
Is Washington better than OU? I don't know. I still don't know what the criteria are. I mean, I guess because they had fewer losses. I mean, and Trammell, I think, said this as well. It comes down to fewer losses. I mean, the 4-1-loss teams got in, and the 2-loss teams did not. And I don't know. I just think the committee is the whole thing is just a sham. It's silly.
And now the Big 12 panicked. They added a championship game because they thought that meant something.
It's hilarious.
Now it means absolutely zero. Now Mike Gundy's going to have to beat Oklahoma twice. That'll be fun for him, won't it?
Oklahoma's
going to play. He's got to look over the cross sideline and see Bob twice. That'll just give him nightmares.
As long as Bob – okay, how about this? As long as Bob Stoops is at OU and as long as there is a round robin plus a Big 12 title game, Oklahoma State will never get in the college football playoff. It will never happen.
Bold statement.
It won't happen.
Like to say never, but
you can beat OU twice. Seriously,
that's just funny.
Yeah, like I don't know. We need to go.
Big 12 can just like the Big 12 is just making it so hard on their champion to get in the playoff now.
Yeah,
like not only do you play a round robin, you have to beat a team twice. That's one of the hardest things to do in sports.
You know who else OU would beat right now? Clemson.
Clemson's OU's given up, I think, on an average 20 points per game. Their defense has gotten better. Now they've played some of the worst teams in the Big 12, you could argue.
Yeah, but
they just held OSU to 3 points in the second half.
You're disincentivizing teams to play big-time non-conference games, which is a bummer to me. Kind of.
Ohio State got in just by.
Yeah, I know. You're disincentivizing teams like, I think, Oklahoma State to play big-time non-conference games. I think you might be incentivizing teams like Ohio State, OU, Tennessee. But, I mean, not Oklahoma State because you can't afford the loss. You got to go 12-0. I mean,
even then, they'll rail on their non-conference and eye test, and they won't get in anyway. So, OSU probably won't ever get in the playoff anyway if they go undefeated and win by 50.
Yeah. Okay, we got anything else?
Is that a sad note to end on?
Well, I just said they would never. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to apologize to all our podcast listeners. I will not be doing the Warrior Poem today. Glenn Spencer has it out for me. He posted a research project as his Warrior Poem. It's either The Hunted or The Hunted with a Komodo dragon description, a leopard, a crocodile, a blue-ringed octopus, a black mamba, a rhino, and a great white shark with like a paragraph for all of them. No one wants to listen to that. Like, I love the people that love the Warrior Poem, but with the way that game played out, I am not in the mood.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I can't do a British accent that long either. So.
No. Okay, well.
Glenn Spencer, hot seat? No.
They finished with a top five Big 12 defense.
Okay.
I mean,
they only gave up 40 in one game.
Is that seriously?
Texas Tech. It's the only game they gave up 40.
Wow. It felt like they should have against Pitt, OU, Baylor. They only had one really good game, TCU.
Yeah, but they didn't give up 40 but one time.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's pretty good.
That is good.
This league?
Yeah.
Your offense, you should win every game. You have 38 to OU. Now, I know P. Ryan took a knee, or else it would have been 40.
Yeah.
But the game was over at that point.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Carson, we will not talk to you later in the week because breaking news. I don't know if this is breaking. Some people might know, but we're having a baby this week.
Oh, is it time?
Yeah, tomorrow, Tuesday. By the time some people listen to this, we will probably have already had our kid.
Papa Pistols. I love it. Congratulations. Yeah. Hopefully everything goes well, and we can do a pot. We can have more Gundy takes once you have the little one. Is it a boy or a girl?
We don't know. I'm pushing to name it Rory either way. So.
So Mike is out after Saturday.
Mason has been discarded from from the pile. Dez is still on the table either way too, boy or girl.
Bob.
Yeah. Bowlesby Porter.
And Stoops.
No, I know, but I'm going through the Big 12.
Okay.
So yeah, I'll be out the rest of the week, but we'll be back at it hopefully next week. Got some basketball to talk about. Got a bowl game to talk about.
Big Dave, post the game, Big Dave. I want to see if Gundy called a timeout before the review or not. Actually, I have my other ways to watch it.
Yeah, let me know.
I'll have more Gundy takes once you get back.
Okay, talk to you later, Carson.
See ya.